The audible of the best in Bitcoin. This is the Cryptoconomy. We have got a good one today, guys. This one's it's not very long. It's written by, this is actually the first, it's an op-ed on Bitcoin Magazine, first-time author on the show. Nozomi Hayase, and it's titled Bitcoin is the Technology of Dissent that Secures Individual Liberties, and it's part of the Bitcoin is Dissident Technology or Bitcoin Through Dissident Technology like kind of series that Bitcoin Magazine is doing. If you actually see it, they've got like a little collection of articles that are all basically different perspectives around this same topic, and it's really, really good stuff. I've been loving all of these. This one is amazing. Again, by Nozomi Hayase. And before we jump into it, just a quick thank you to the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network and Bitcoin Magazine for letting us dig into these works. But let's go ahead and get into the article. Bitcoin is the technology of dissent that secures individual liberties. The UK hearing of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange's US extradition on the week of February 24, 2020, presented a test of Western liberal democracy. The indictment of Assange under the Espionage Act for publishing classified documents which exposed US war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan is recognized by free speech groups as an unprecedented attack on the First Amendment. With the government's criminalization of journalism, we are seeing a deepening crisis of legitimacy that has begun to unravel a decade ago. Bitcoin emerged during the 2008 financial meltdown as a response to bank bailouts and a cycle of austerity. Over its 10 years of existence, the technology has steadily maintained its fundamentals of censorship resistance and permissionless usage. Now, more than ever, Bitcoin shows these defining features as its value proposition. As the government becomes more authoritarian, those who speak truth to power are being punished more harshly. Bitcoin as a technology of dissent provides alternative forms of resistance that are much more peaceful and joyous. It offers an avenue for people around the world to express their opposition against their government without directly confronting it with power. Instead, it is simply creating a new world that makes the old system obsolete. The premise of unalienable rights. The invention of Bitcoin didn't happen overnight. It was built on cumulative efforts of the past. The development of this technology of dissent can be traced back to the history of people's liberation from the arbitrary power of the king and despotic government. In the United States, after the victory of the Revolutionary War, the Founding Fathers rejected the rule of British monarchy. In the Declaration of Independence, the premise was given for unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Expressed in the words of Thomas Jefferson, that is to be applied equally to all people. In establishing the U.S. Constitutional Republic, these premises remained no more than ideals, and they were constantly threatened. The original Constitution, ratified in 1787, lacked the guarantee to secure individual liberties that inherently belong to all people. The proponents of the Bill of Rights demanded a safeguard against the government. They articulated the protection of essential parts of unalienable rights in the First Amendment to the Constitution as a freedom of expression, freedom of speech, religion, assembly, and the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Security hole in the Constitution. Erosion of civil rights took place through a loophole in the security within the Constitution. While a law of separation between church and state is placed in the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, separation of money and state was not. Under the First Amendment, individuals' right to create, choose their own money, and transact freely was not recognized as a part of freedom of expression that needs to be protected. The central control over money production faced a major security breach. Attorney Ellen Brown explains how most people think money is issued by fiat, declared to be legal tender by the government, but the creation of money has been taken over by private corporations like the Federal Reserve. Privatized national and corporate currencies created out of thin air around the world came to function as a medium of control, allowing big business to create market monopolies. This began to debase the intrinsic value of the natural rights of a person, evidenced in the nation's founding document. By transforming those inalienable rights into a permissioned form of legal rights that can be infringed upon by the government, corporations and private banks began to steal individual liberties. Freedom of expression became further stifled through economic censorship and financial blockage enacted by payment processing companies like Visa and MasterCard. Cypherpunks, an internet revolt. As the state's assault on civil liberty has increased, rebellion came from the internet. On February 8, 1996, when Congress enacted the Telecommunications Reform Act that enabled media consolidation and monopoly of flow of information, John Perry Barlow, internet pioneer, wrote a Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace. Addressing it to, quote, governments of the industrial world, he called for a creation of a, quote, world where anyone anywhere may express his or her beliefs, no matter how singular, without fear of being coerced into silence or conformity, end quote. Those who revolted against the arbitrary power of the national government became dissidents in the new frontier of cyberspace. They found each other and formed an association that came to be known as the Cypherpunks, loosely tied online activists who advocate social change by the use of strong cryptography. Tim May, one of the influential cypherpunks and the author of the Crypto-Anarchist Manifesto, recognized money as speech. At the Computer Freedom and Privacy Conference in 1997, he described how digital cash equaled speech. He then noted how untraceable digital cash is indistinguishable from speech, and explained how any laws intended to control it will almost certainly impinge on speech in general. Cypherpunks began envisioning a stateless digital form of money that is uncensorable, and their collaborative pursuit created a movement for a new enlightenment. Philosophers in the Enlightenment era advocated for conceptions of democratic rights based on natural law. In his seminal work, The Spirit of Laws, published in 1748, Montesquieu wrote, quote, "Laws in their broadest sense are the necessary relations which are derived from the nature of things. Once free from the yoke of religion, we should still be subject to the rule of justice. Law, like mathematics, has its objective structure, which no arbitrary whim can alter. Before there were any enacted laws, just relations were possible." End quote. Cypherpunks understood that while alienable rights that are bestowed by law can be taken away by legislation, inalienable rights are not to be created, but can be discoverable by reason. Thus, laws that secure inalienable rights cannot be created by man, but can be found in nature. Open source process of scientific discovery. Like Enlightenment thinkers who tried to explain the laws of society and human nature through scientific methods, the anonymous creator of Bitcoin instigated a scientific process of discovering a way to restore money in its original form as an enshrinement of an unalienable right. Bitcoin is free software that gives the user full control of the program. Anyone can observe, share knowledge, and contribute to the development of the protocol through participating in reviewing, testing, and experimentation. Here, principles of nature that were discovered were applied to create a decentralized digital currency and a market that is free from the control of the government. They included breakthroughs in computer science that led to the invention of a consensus algorithm, the laws of thermodynamics, study of science concerning heat, temperature, and their relation to energy, and three natural laws of economics, self-interest, competition, and supply and demand, that were identified by Adam Smith, a father of modern economics. In Bitcoin, based on the principle of game theory to create fairness, miners engage in a broadcast math competition, aligning self-interests of all in a network with a careful balance of risk and rewards. Rules are enforced without applying any external pressure. Bitcoin regulates itself through the spontaneous force of nature, flourishing healthy price discovery and competition in the best interest of everyone. Intrinsic value of liberty. As the British court wrapped up its fake judicial process in the deliberation of the U.S. extradition request for the persecuted and tortured journalist Julian Assange, Western democracy shows its final decline. This irreparable system continues to suck people into an electoral arena trying to keep them under its control. While many engage in protest or petitioning, busying themselves with cheering on their favorite candidates in political contests, Bitcoin provides a formidable tool for dissent, allowing people to simply opt out altogether from this corrupted system. The bureaucratic system of the modern nation-state, administered by central banks, magistrates, presidents, and prime ministers, has alienated us from the harmonious state of the world we belong to, depriving us of our innate rights and liberties. Now, imagination from computer science inspires us to rediscover intrinsic value within ourselves. The wisdom of nature that governs our behavior and our rights to express ourselves freely and create our own life. We, Bitcoiners, are all dissidents in the old world of trusted third parties. We defy the rules of empire states in order to trust our ability to become our own authority. Laws of nature that are higher than man-made laws, being enforced by mathematics, have begun to reorganize a society. The frictionless flow of Bitcoin allows us to diverge from the mainstream of national currency that keeps us in a debt spiral. It allows us to transcend borders and bypass checkpoints. Voluntary association formed through this free speech money is creating a new economy, fueling innovations and opportunities for jobs. Every 10 minutes, the heart of Bitcoin beats, setting computers around the world in motion. From developers to miners and users running full nodes that relay and validate transactions, together, all engage in computing as an act of civil disobedience, keeping the network decentralized. As we collectively dissent, the wealth of the network rises, securing equality and liberty as unalienable universal rights for all people. This is an op-ed contribution by Nozomi Hayase. Views expressed are her own and do not necessarily reflect those of Bitcoin Magazine or BTC Incorporated. The technology of dissent. I love that. All right, let's hit our sponsor real fast, and then I want to dig into this piece. All right. Now, before we get into the really good stuff, I want to go ahead and disagree with one thing in the article here. And this is really a problem of semantics, in my opinion, but a lot of people say this, and I think it completely obscures what the underlying problem is when it's positioned like this. So I actually do want to bring it up. I actually think it's an important semantic argument to clarify. And I'll just at least give my perspective on it. Quote, "The central control over money production faced a major security breach. Attorney Ellen Brown explains how most people think money is issued by fiat, declared to be legal tender by the government. But the creation of money has been taken over by private corporations like the Federal Reserve. Privatized national and corporate currencies, created out of thin air around the world, came to function as a medium of control, allowing big business to create market monopolies. End quote. Now, I have a problem with calling the Federal Reserve a private corporation. It started as a private corporation, but when the whole problem of government is the fact that it holds a monopoly, and the way government becomes corrupt, the whole mechanism of corruption is in private interests, is in its susceptibility to private interests. They're the same people as everybody else. All the people in government are greedy. All the people outside of government are greedy. There is nothing new here. We will all behave in our self-interest. So the point is, if person A has a gun where they can just tell everybody what to do, and person B has to cooperate with them, well, person B, if they have a lot of money and a lot of influence, might realize that they can make person A their customer, and everyone else will essentially have to do what they want. And they can make person A rich, they can control person A, and use their monopoly of control, of authority, in order to enforce their quote-unquote private company, their product, onto all of the citizens. But it is because of the government, it is because of that monopoly of authority, that actually the problem is created. So as soon as they start using that tool, as soon as they are protected by the government, as soon as they have enacted a law, the Federal Reserve Act, I can't call that a private corporation anymore. It has no market competition. It's not private. It's privately owned. Like, it's run by people who own the bank, but it's not in a market. I don't know. The defining of whether or not this is a private corporation really bugs me, because it's the wording of this makes it suggest to people who are ignorant of it. Like, I know that's not what this is saying, but it makes it suggest to people who would be ignorant of it that the private market, that private ownership is the underlying problem, when that's exactly the opposite of the truth. It's the fact that private money, that a private corporation can use public monopoly enforcement to protect its monopoly, to essentially grant itself a monopoly. The government is the only monopoly that gets the excuse, the benefit of the doubt, that whatever it does is right. It's just and correct. Nobody in the private market gets that excuse. Walmart couldn't send police to your house and force you to buy some of their products and get away with it in the minds of all the people. Like, maybe they would be scared of Walmart coming after them with guns and violence and, thugs, but they would never go, yeah, Walmart's the good guy. What did the guy in the house do that they didn't buy Walmart products? Why didn't they do that? Yet that's the treatment, that's the mentality that enters into everything that government does, is the excuse that the government was just right by default because they're allowed to do this. It is the one institution that is allowed to break into somebody's house because they didn't buy a product from them. And when that is leveraged to give your private corporation legitimacy, a legal standing, a market position that cannot be contested, that no longer has to, like, they were given the authority to print money, to print the U.S. dollar. Like, it used to be the Treasury. Like, the U.S. Treasury used to manage the dollar, and whatever was in the Treasury, Congress was in charge of the policy, and it was sort of answerable to by the people, and the Treasury Department issued and managed the reserve of the currency. Then, in 1913, it got handed over to a bank. And now anything that the Federal Reserve issues must be accepted as legal tender by the dictate of the United States, and it is equal to the dollar. Anything printed in the fractional reserve system, any non-reserve-backed, non-backed loan created in the fractional reserve system, and any lender of last resort, anything issued out by the Federal Reserve is all indistinguishable from the actual United States currency. Now, I don't know what to call that, but calling it a private corporation seems to obscure the problem, in my opinion. Now, I will admit it's not a public company either. It's this weird amalgamation. It's this murky monster of corruption and public privilege, authoritative privilege. It is only a mechanism of authority, and that's it. It's not really answerable to anything. It's privately owned, but it has all the authorities of the public monopoly. So anyway, that's just a little nitpick. I don't want to go too far into that, because it is really just a semantic thing. I just hate that there's not a clear way to define that without feeling like it's reinforcing the wrong perspective. It's reinforcing a prejudice that makes it really easy to excuse and pretend that private corporations are greedy, but then as soon as something is in the government, it's the problem that private corporations exist in the first place when the people aren't any different. There's no magic wand or no magic badge or costume or occupational like label next to a name that makes someone not greedy or not power hungry. It's about the incentives in the system and the accountability of the system. And because government doesn't have it, corporations love to make the government their best friend. But the second part of that quote is absolutely right. Privatized national and corporate currencies created out of thin air around the world came to function as a medium of control, allowing big business to create market monopolies. I'm sure everyone has heard it, but every time something like this comes up, all I can think is how poorly the average person understands the banking and monetary system. And it always, always brings me back to that Henry Ford quote. It is well enough that people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system. For if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning. I hate sounding like a crazy person, but literally our monetary system is one of the greatest thefts in the history of the world. I think looking back on it, that's what it will be seen as. It will be seen as a brilliant political system for controlling people indirectly and without them being fully aware of it. And maybe it is one of those things where education is the only escape. And, you know, maybe that's what got us out of our previous, you know, the Age of Enlightenment kind of broke our, the idea of religion as a form of control, that we have the freedom, we have the autonomy to find our own religion, to do our own discovering, that it is not something that people will just dictate to us. They don't know it any better than we do. Like the illusion of that we were not created equal before the religious authority, that some people know and can dictate what God wants this afternoon and you better get it for me ASAP, and that other people are just there to learn from them. But when that autonomy was given really by the printing press, when new technology opened up and brought literacy to the world, that same century, the growth in literacy, that was the age of literacy. It really was. And that's fascinating that a technology can have such a profound impact on everything about us. To see in the matter of a century, I think it was like somewhere between like 10 and 15% literacy to upwards of 80% in just from 1500 to 1600. Now those numbers might be a little bit off, but I think it was in Nick Carter's, Ter de Meester's piece about the Reformation, the Bitcoin Reformation. I think that's where he goes into it, and I talk about that in the commentary after the read. But I think it seems to make sense that Bitcoin and decentralized money has the potential to do that same thing for monetary intelligence, for the ideas of autonomy, to expose the corruption and the control that has been used through our money. Like the printing press taught us how to read the language, the Bitcoin and decentralized money will teach us how to read money. And it absolutely is a technology of dissent. Printing press, I think, absolutely is another technology of dissent. It spreads ideas which inherently create a power hierarchy when they are not spread. The limited distribution of ideas and understanding and education is exactly that which creates a very uneven power hierarchy. And she mentions, Nozomi mentions two different pieces in this, both of which we've actually read on the show, if I'm not mistaken. I've definitely read both of them, but it's John Perry Barlow's Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace, and then Tim May's Crypto Anarchist Manifesto. Both of them are solid, like, age-old cypherpunk pieces. Like, they are quintessential to understanding the perspective that built to Bitcoin. Like she talks about in this article, that there was a long foundation of dissent and people getting together and realizing the power of strong cryptography, to have a tool like that to protect yourself from the state and from these monopolies that seek to enact control in every way, whether it's to regulate speech and control what we can say and what we can think, versus which I think that's largely a part of controlling our money, is that inherently it indirectly controls those other things as well. It controls what we can learn. It controls how we see the world. It controls our time preference. And no matter how hard we fight against it, it enacts influence regardless of our own autonomy. But we do. We have the ability to opt out. And that's a first. It's the first of its kind. Now, she includes a quote from Montesquieu in this that I thought was really fascinating. Just the kind of second part that I think is really important is that there is an objective structure to law, that there is an underlying system of relation that is natural. And that law, like, I'll read the quote first. Law, like mathematics, has its objective structure, which no arbitrary whim can alter. Before there were any enacted laws, just relations were possible. So without the fact, before there were law, before there was actually, like, defined law, we could still know and understand what just relation with other people was. And we can deduce. It's very much like mathematics. We deduce these things, and inherent to them are those powers which are given to us by the fact that we are the owner and the mover, the controller of our own bodies, versus knowing that everyone external to us is the controller. We must assume that they are the owner and the one controlling their bodies as well. And from that, we can objectively find those relations which are non-contradictory, where that other person, there's no reason that they are any greater or less than me, that they are equal. And therefore, any relation between us must be that we are equal. There can be no contradiction where that person owns themselves plus a little bit of me, but somehow I don't own all of me. That doesn't make any sense. Those two things cannot be, they're mutually exclusive. And that's where law goes wrong, is that it must be non-contradictory or it cannot be an objective truth. It cannot be a natural law if it contradicts itself. Gravity is never confused. It doesn't contradict itself. If we have a law of gravity or a law of physics that contradicts itself, well then, what we know is that our law is broken because the universe does not contradict itself. Now, human nature and human action is murky. Yes, we have subjective values. Our experiences inform a lot of what we think and perceive about the world. But that does not change the non-contradictory nature of how we should be relating to each other. I still think there is something objective to deduce out of that that allows just relations where we can know whether or not our interactions with other people are in fact just. But that's a much, much longer conversation than a guy's rant. But I just thought that was a really, really fascinating quote. And it's always been a really cool concept of mine because I have had some really fun debates on whether or not there is an objective truth in law. That is there any sort of, I guess you could say, freedom or liberty that can be equally defined? And I still truly think that there is. Granted, I may not have every corner of that argument sorted out, and it's something that I'm always trying to discover more of and trying to attack in new directions. But I absolutely believe there is a powerful truth to the fact that justice and the idea of morality can be deduced from things that we know about our world and about ourselves. And it's very similar to economics in that. I mean, that's kind of the Austrian theory, is to deduce from human action, from basic human tendencies and principles that we can basically take as universal, to then extrapolate the values of economics, to deduce our relative economic understandings and relative valuations of things across time and across alternatives. Bitcoin is such an interesting new tool in trying to deduce those truths. I mean, like Gigi says, Bitcoin has taught me more than I will teach it. Like, Bitcoin changes us more than we change Bitcoin. And I think that's true, is that there is a lot that we can learn from Bitcoin. And, you know, I talk about like the bad incentives of governments and, you know, private corporations. Is the Federal Reserve a private corporation? Is it public? Like, how do we even define the difference between the two? But I think we can see there's such a potent lesson to be learned in Bitcoin, that you can force honesty through self-interest, and you can know that even within that system, there's a degree of, like, you know, even the governments that participate in it, even the private corporations that participate in it, even the individuals are all aligned in a sort of form of interdependency in order to reach consensus, to find an honest truth for everyone to work from. And that everyone is checking everyone else's work. And because we are all self-interested, it's using those incentives. It's recognizing the incentives that fail in government and the incentives that fail in large centralized corporations, and using that against them by creating a system where those very incentives immunize against the corruption they would normally cause. It literally uses greed and self-interest to force accountability and cooperation. That is not a minor divergence from the systems of trust that we are used to. That is a radical departure from the foundations of the current monetary systems. The last section she hits in this is the intrinsic value of liberty. And that's a really interesting title for that section. Because I've used this argument sort of before, but I kind of shied away from it, but I keep coming back to it. And she makes kind of a good introductory position for this, is that Bitcoin offers sovereignty. As Max Hillebrand said when we interviewed him on the show, it's a weapon of self-defense. It allows self-sovereignty in a way that nothing else is capable of, within its own system, within all of the participants who also may seek self-sovereignty. And you know, that might not be everybody. But for the people who do seek it, it grants it to them. And so far, it has been able to defend and protect that right. And I think the people who dismiss that are just unbelievably ignorant and missing out on one of the most profound things that has happened in centuries. I thought this article, aside from my very minor semantic disagreement, just really hit the nail on the head. Maybe I'm just looking for that cypherpunk rush of blood. I love this article. I love this whole series of stuff. And again, this was an op-ed on Bitcoin Magazine by Nozomi Hayase. I hope I'm saying that name right. I don't really know, to be perfectly honest. But again, it was titled, "Bitcoin is the technology of dissent that secures individual liberties." And this was just a great article. First one by Nozomi. Massive applause for that. And thank you so much for listening, guys. I hope you enjoyed that one as much as I did. I am out for today. Don't forget to check out Bitcoin Magazine. Much love to the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network and that crew over there for the amazing content they put out and for sharing this out with their audience. If you are not subscribed to this show, do not forget to subscribe to The Crypto Economy with Guy Swan. That is me. We have these reads literally on the daily. So don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss all of the other amazing stuff that we read about Bitcoin, about liberty, about self-sovereignty, about securing your world in this new space that we are heading into in the future of the crypto economy. Because I think if we can learn the tools and we can build the tools, we have that technology available to us to actually take us down a different path. And just like Nozomi said, we build a new world that simply obsoletes the old. So that's what we do here. I am Guy Swan, the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And this is where we read, explore, and talk all about it. Thank you guys for joining me. I am out for today. I love you all. Until next time, take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.